could have predicted after analyzing the content of your mind for 12 years. Because that would be moving within the realm of the conditioned. And so for those humans who do not move beyond the realm of the conditioned, both personal, in a personal sense, and the vast collective conditioning that you inherit, that is to do with the culture you live in, the time period you live in, the genetic conditioning, the very fact that you are a human is already means you're conditioned in many ways. You have a mind, a human mind, which is collectively conditioned already. So those, and then comes your personal conditioning from your childhood and your life experiences. So those humans who don't go beyond their conditioning, you can predict more or less within a realm of relative certainty how their life is going to develop. Yes, things may change on an external level, but you can more or less predict their relationships, the problems they're going to have, because it's all already there in the conditioning. And the conditioning may be, in some cases, in some humans, it's better, relatively better than in others. You could say, although all humans have the basic collective conditioning, they are burdened with a mind that never stops thinking. They are burdened with the pain of humanity that each human carries inside as the pain body. That's the collective that each human has. On the personal, there are variations. Some humans come into this world and say they've got it made already. When they're 18, they already drive the Ferrari. Everything they ever wanted is given to them. Well, if you look at their life, you may find it wasn't all that great to have that. Others come into this life, we could say every human comes with a, like is given a block of piece of wood and say, see, that's your conditioning. And some blocks of wood look already quite nice. He says, oh, I can work with that easily, can make that. And other people get blocks of wood and say, what is this? They are born into totally dysfunctional families. Everything seems to be designed to make their life hard and difficult. And yet, they may end up in prison. And yet, at some point, it happens to some humans, and it's happening more and more human beings on the planet now. At some point, something arises that cannot be explained from the conditioning of your mind. Something arises in a human being you could have never have predicted, that this person, the criminal, who all his life committed crimes, ended up in prison, spent 10 years in prison, and suddenly, through the suffering became so unbearable, suddenly, the story, the life, the I that is identified with me and my story collapsed through surrender because the suffering was too much. And there was simply the isness of this moment. And I'm saying, I have received quite a few letters from people in jail who have experienced this very same thing. Suddenly becoming free of the me, of the heaviness of identifying with me and my story. And what's left then? A field of aware presence. Yes, they are still sitting in a prison cell, but they are no longer deriving their identity from the story that says this is what they have done to me, or this is what life has come to, this is what how life has treated me unfairly, this is what these bastards have done to me, they've put me in here, and I've been in here for 12 years, I'm going to be another 20 years. And the story that is around, I failed, everything failed, my whole life is totally awful. It's an unpleasant story. And some stories have to become very unpleasant before they collapse. Or not necessarily collapse, before you withdraw your identification from it. So it happens to some people that so many things go wrong that the story of me becomes more and more unhappy. One thing, and this is how traditionally people have had the spiritual realization of who they are beyond the story. It's only when the story collapsed or became so unpleasant and heavy that they could not bear it anymore. And suddenly something happened and something emerged from within that has nothing to do with the story. A deeper sense of I, which was always there, but it got mixed up with the story. So when you look at your life, you may find that when you were in your teens, early 20s, your life was very different from the way it is now. You may have gone through tremendous changes already, totally different life situation perhaps, but there was always that underlying, at the deepest level, the underlying sense of I that didn't change. If your story changed completely, if you're poor now and a few weeks from now, you're extremely wealthy and the whole, let's say you're poor and in the eyes of the world, unimportant, totally meaningless thing anyway. It's wonderful to be unimportant in the eyes of the world. If you're poor now and unimportant in the eyes of the world, and suddenly in a month's time, they discover you. It could be true because there are so many actors in L.A. And so, let's say, suddenly, a month from now, you're sitting in a cafe and a man comes and says, give me a call, here's my card. And you read and says, whoever, famous director. And a few months later, you move from your little room to Beverly Hills. And then you sit there in Beverly Hills and you think, wow. It feels like a new and completely different incarnation from being a waiter or waitress only a few months ago. And now the world, suddenly, I'm on the front page of magazines and you look at yourself. Wow. And then if you look deeper, although the story has changed, you find the sense of I hasn't really changed. On the surface, the change has happened, but the I am-ness hasn't changed. No matter what happened on the surface of your life. So people confuse that deep sense of beingness, of presence, with a story. So if you can step out of the story and feel that directly, the sense of beingness or presence, nothing to do with your life situation your past or your future. Nothing to do even with your name. There is an underlying field of presence, of beingness. And that, miraculously, is inseparable from what now is in its deepest sense. So what does that mean? It means consciousness. Itself, before consciousness takes form. That is the deepest part of who you are. You are consciousness itself. You are not what you are listening to right now, not what you think right now, but how is it? What is it that makes the listening possible at this very moment? What is it? Conscious. Awareness. Conscious. Whatever, however you want to put it, there's a field. I sometimes call it the field of now. The field of now, and then things happen in it. They come and go. The form changes. If you could live life in such a way that you do not lose touch with the field of now, then whatever happens in the now will not overpower you, and you will realize there's a far greater power inside you than there could possibly be anywhere in the world of form. The world of form, which is the physical universe, looks sometimes so overwhelming. But it's nothing compared to who you are in your essence, the formless one life, one consciousness out of which all forms come. And so, just little one additional pointer to this. As you realize this, you realize that there are, one could say, don't take anything too literally because they're only pointers, there are inside you, could say, two dimensions. Just, this is very, very simple. This could be explained to a six-year-old. There are two dimensions inside you, as, and this you can verify because as within, so without. There are also two dimensions outside. What does that mean? Right, it's very simple. When you look around, and I suggest you go do it at night, the sky is clear, you look up at the sky, and you see, of course, this, you still see what's on around you, the houses and so on, and then you look into space. And then you realize, when you look into space, you realize that whatever you out is out there, there are two dimensions. And it's almost too simple. There are things in space, galaxies, billions of galaxies of suns. There are things in space, and there is space. When you look outside, that is obvious. And when you look into space, the vastness of space is beyond anyone's comprehension. When you look out into that vastness with a few things in it, so-called things, you see, it is awe-inspiring to look out into space, and when you truly look, your mind becomes still. You can't explain space. They've tried, but they didn't get very far. What? And then as soon as you start speaking about space, you ask questions, well, okay, how far does it go? Well, and then some say, well, it goes on forever. Forever. And what's behind that? And others say, well, it curves back upon itself. And then you think, okay, but then what is outside this thing then? There must be something outside if it curves back. Impossible. Totally incomprehensible. But what you can think about is the things in space. Oh, you can actually get a telescope and look, oh, there's star that and such a star. And then you can collect data about it, you can think about it. You can measure it's the light frequency that comes from it. You can work out how big it is, how many light years it is away. That you can think about. Space, you can't really think about. So when you look outside, there is space and things in space. And even here in this room, there are things in this room. And another, what is easily overlooked, there is space. Without it, nothing could be here. And the strange thing is, the same is inside you. There are things inside you which are thoughts, perceptions, thoughts, emotions. You look, there's a sense perception. The sense perception becomes a nerve impulse. The nerve impulse is decoded in some way that nobody understands. And then something is recreated in your mind as a thought form, which is the sense perception, a thing. So whatever you see is a thing, is an inner thing. A thought that you think is also a thing. Anything that arises inside you is something. And for most people, that's all there is to their lives. All they know is the things inside them with which they are identified as me. What they don't know is just as outside there are things and there is the space in which the things appear, the same is inside you. There are things and there is a vast space or spaciousness inside you also, which is actually as deep and as vast as what you see out there and cannot think about. And that space, we could also call it stillness, an inner field of stillness in which thoughts happen, because a thought is a thing. When you allow the things in your life in this moment to be as they are, also allow the things inside you to be as they are, thoughts come, emotions come, you perceive whatever is in the field of awareness now. When you allow something spacious is realized inside you, a sense of space opens up inside you, and you realize there is in you what we could call object consciousness, which is the continuous stream of thinking, me, my story, my this, my that. And there is also inside you space consciousness. And in many of you, that dimension is arising in your life, the unconditioned consciousness, not a form. It's just like space. It's not a thought. You can't think about it, and yet all thought comes out of it. So we are speaking of a sense of inner spaciousness that is there when you allow the form to be as it is, and because allowing is space. Without allowing in your life, everything is crammed full with objects, one after one damn thing after another. One damn thing after another. Why doesn't life leave me ever alone? And one thought comes after another and another. And the same history of humanity, as many of you know, I've quoted it a few times, one damn thing after another was Winston Churchill's definition of history. And it's the same still. Switch on the TV. Oh, they're doing it again. Wasn't the 20th century enough, the horrors of that? Didn't they learn? No. One, and there's no end to it unless something shifts in here. So unless something shifts in here in a sufficiently large number of people on the planet. Otherwise, it can only get worse. And so this is why we are here. If this shift were not happening, why would so many people be here? Would so many people respond to the book, The Power of Now, and other forms in which the new consciousness comes in? By the new consciousness, I mean space, the unconditioned. It's not new, it's timeless. But we call it new because most humans, up till now, had no idea that it existed. So they were like people walking around destitute, not realizing that they have a bank account in Switzerland with $10 million in it. Please give me a dime. Didn't you know that you are... analogies are always a little defective, because $1 million wouldn't save you at all. Wouldn't make any difference. So people... not in touch with that dimension, not realizing that who they are in their essence is not anything, is not anything they had hitherto identified with as me, is not anything that happens in your life. People have been looking for themselves in things. This is how thoughts become invested with self. So they're looking for themselves in situations, as an enhanced sense of self through adding a few more things. It doesn't have to be material things. Some never go beyond the level of needing to add more material things to finally feel that I am now fully myself. Others graduate, they move beyond material things and then try to add other things to themselves. Still the same pattern may operate, become knowledgeable, add more of that in a search for me. experiences, as many experiences as possible. I'm a collector of experiences. I'm looking for the next thing to experience. Where's food? Again, it's not food. The body doesn't want the food. It wants only what's needed. But the need for more gets translated into the physical realm. The body doesn't want unlimited sex. Occasionally it wants sex. It's part of the natural functioning of the body. But it's the obsession with sex or the obsession with food is the need for more, which is in the human mind, to add more. I feel so incomplete. Okay, let's have some more sex. Or let's go to the fridge. And so the need for more, which is deep-seated in the human mind, more, which is the need for future, the need for the next moment, can become translated into the need for another sandwich or piece of cake. And for a little while you feel, and then again comes the feeling of lack, not enough. Okay, where can I get more now? TV, another experience. You watch violence on the screen. Okay. Anything to avoid spaciousness. I will do anything to avoid spaciousness in my life. Okay, where's the next thing? And this is how people live. And we have an entire culture, an entire civilization, an entire industry designed to a large extent to fill up people's, to satisfy people's need for more, to fill up people's inner space with more things. And it is rare, but it happens because there is a shift coming. It is rare that anything you see in the media, in films, for example, that dimension comes in. And sometimes it does, and it's wonderful to see it when the dimension of space comes into a film that becomes a mainstream film, and suddenly you have, wow, there's something there. And people may not know what it is. Oh. And so they may say, oh, it's a great film, and something within them may recognize it, something there. So I don't see films very often, but occasionally I watch, and it's wonderful. I saw an old film recently, I only saw it a few months ago, The Horse Whisperer, and that is a film that has space in it. People don't realize when you watch it, and there are some other films, when you watch it, certain space arises inside you also, a stillness. There's certain instances. I could probably name a few, but you will see it, you'll know it when you see it. It's beautiful when it comes through the mainstream media and a different dimension comes in. So, but to a large extent, it's still, let's avoid that. Let's just not find your reality, So the egoic entity, which consists of thought forms and emotional forms, doesn't want to look at space because it consists of form, of things. I want just more to add to. But it can't do much because there is a vastness inside you, and it, no matter how disturbed, no matter how not at peace a human being is, in each human being that dimension, we could call it space, we could call it stillness, we could call it
peace is there, it cannot be destroyed. No matter what happened to you in your life, and there may be some of you to whom dreadful things happened, perhaps in your childhood, because many dreadful things happen in this world at this very moment in many parts of the planet. Not only the obvious things, but also where you don't see it, in families, everywhere. No matter how dreadful things, whatever dreadful things happened to you in your life, that dimension could never be destroyed or harmed, affected in any way. There's a temptation when something dreadful happened to you in your life to continue to identify with that image that something dreadful happened to you. It is good, of course, to acknowledge the pain you feel. It's very important to allow it to be. That's very important. Not to carry an identity around with you. I am such and such. That is heavy. See, realize who you are beyond that. And it also applies if you did something in your life to someone because you were unconscious, you couldn't help it. This is the humanity. Don't carry with you the self-image of someone who did that. It was one of the expressions that human unconsciousness can take. And what is human unconsciousness? Unconsciousness is complete identification with a conditioned mind. That's all. And there is nothing ultimately personal in it. It is not who you are. It gets mixed up with the I, with the now. So the world is seems to be deteriorating, but it's deteriorated for a long time. The unenlightened state of consciousness, of unconsciousness. What we don't see, especially these days on the news, is that something is emerging at the same time. And it often happens that the old unconsciousness deteriorates as the new arises simultaneously. So for example, you cannot say, even a limited example, there was a spiritual awakening that's here in the 60s. There was an enormous influx suddenly of people disidentifying from things that they had hitherto identified with. In other cases, they identified with something, some new image. Yes, that happened also. But there was some space arising a little bit, and then become obscured again, but there was an arising of that which was not conditioned, which occasionally, yes, turned into conditioning also, but that's fine. And that coincided, there was the Vietnam War, which people said, awful things, but at the same time, there was the unconsciousness, which became so obvious. The unconsciousness that is in the human psyche became so obvious when you look at what it is doing. And you can look at the whole 20th century and see what humans have done to other humans throughout the 20th century incredible suffering. God, no.
And don't fall into the temptation of believing that what you see on the TV screen is all there is.
When you watch TV, I recommend that you don't watch all day long, especially these days. When you watch the news or anything else, don't underestimate the importance of your state of consciousness at that moment. I'm not saying don't do anything. Whatever you do, you will do. But let the doing come out of the unconditioned, not the conditioned. So when you watch images on the screen, death and destruction, even without a war, many images on the screen are of death and destruction that you see in the news. And if that were not enough, they recreate fictions on the screen are death and destruction. Amazing. It's not enough to watch the news. Then you watch a film that shows the same thing. When you watch the news, don't underestimate your state of consciousness as you watch. And be aware, yes, you may feel emotions arising in you as you watch, but be prior to the emotion. What or who or what is watching those images? Who or what is feeling those emotions that moment? Can you sense as you watch the field of presence, of now, of consciousness, of awareness that you are? And allow those things to be there. Not saying they are good. They are at that moment. In other words, be there as awareness, which is what you are. As you are at this moment. It may be a little easier at this moment to be sitting here and to... let's put it this way. This is the ultimate secret. To be aware of awareness in yourself. And when we put that into language, we have already created a non-existent duality, because it's not that you are aware of awareness. Let's see, there's two things here. There's not you and awareness. You are awareness. You are consciousness prior to form. Without that, this would not be. Even when you dream, you wake up and you say, oh, it was all unreal, it was only a dream. Well, not the dream wasn't totally unreal, because without consciousness there would have been no dream. So the consciousness in which the dream happened was the one thing that was real in the dream, not the forms that were happening in it. Ultimately, they were like smoke, like clouds. And here, ultimately, the one thing that is real is your consciousness, the essence of who you are, which is one with the consciousness, to know yourself as consciousness or awareness. The way I put it just now is, as you sit here, yes, there are things in your field of perception. Yes, seeing happens, hearing happens, an occasional thought comes. What am I going to have for dinner tonight? What's going to happen tomorrow? Because most thoughts are about future or sometimes about past. Yes. Is that all there is? Haven't you overlooked something? Oh. Consciousness, stillness, space, inner space, within which it all happens. Oh, that is the deepest meaning of now, beyond the forms of now. Because the forms are not always what you might choose through the mind. But if you can be aware of awareness in your daily life, that is the unconditioned, is then alive in you, so to speak. Words are all limited. And then you go into a situation, and there is a power in you that is greater than anything that you have learned. It is also a space of no thought, and that's essential to realize, because otherwise you may be sitting here still after all this trying to figure out the essence of what we are talking about. And that is the one thing that you cannot figure out through the mind. The essence of this evening is not something that you could work out through the mind. So what is the essence? The possibility of being in a space of no thought. And many of you, you may not know this, the state of thoughtless awareness, in which there's no loss of consciousness, very alert, deep knowing but not conceptual, that state in many of you is already arising. You may not even know it, because to the mind it is completely insignificant, because the mind is thought, and thoughts are forms, objects in consciousness, and objects in consciousness don't know about space consciousness, a consciousness itself. So you may find when you wake up in the morning, there may be, you open your eyes and there is simple, spacious awareness. For a few seconds. Then you may find when you lift a cup of coffee or tea, in that moment, there's no thought. There is a simple awareness of the movement and just a field of awareness in which it happens. There may be many instances. You may be sitting at a traffic light in your car and there's a moment of no thought. And then thought comes in again and say, oh, remember your problems. You must think about this now. You have great problems. There is no person, by the way, who does not have problems. Because problems arise out of identification with things, with objects. And objects are short-lived, they're not reliable, they let you down. Situations let you down, people let you down. Sooner or later, every object lets you down. Every situation lets you down. You could become famous. And then you're not happy.
it let me down. I thought this was going to be it. And that is amazing. This is, and then you may find yourself looking at a tree, and there's a space of no thought in which the perception happens, which is a stillness, a life stillness. And to the mind, it's not significant. How does that help me solve my problems? It transcends problems. Problems are to do with identifying with thought forms. There are no problems. What do you mean there are no? Look at the world situation. Isn't that a problem? No, it's not a problem. It's suffering. It's happening now. Problem is thought form. In the now you may have a challenge, never a problem. A challenge you meet by giving it attention, and if you give it thoughtless attention, which is, you look at it, and out of just that small space of no thought, just pure aware presence, comes the right action if it's needed. That's the challenge. And that's how some people have found the amazing shift that happened inside them in a moment of an accident, the last few seconds before an accident. The car was coming towards you at 100 miles an hour. And suddenly, no thought, a sudden disidentification from thought forms, consciousness moving out of thought forms into its pure state of consciousness, looking. And then if they survived, and then they said, a strange thing happened to me. The car was coming towards me. I knew there was going to be an accident. And it seemed as if things slowed down and there was no fear. I felt incredibly peaceful, although I knew I could die. Just that incredible sense of peace, wakeful, extreme alertness in that peace. That's what they said, couldn't explain. And other people in extremely dangerous situations went into that state and they acted out of that state. In other words, totally unpremeditated, spontaneous right action happened when a situation occurred that thinking, the conditioned mind, could not possibly have dealt with. It doesn't know enough, it's not fast enough, it doesn't have the information, it cannot deal with true emergencies. Thinking, so sometimes it happens that naturally thinking steps collapses and something takes over that is far more powerful than thought. Not different from thought. Thought is an aspect of the vastness of consciousness. But this is when the unconditioned takes over. And it's always still, alert, present. And out of that, they act or action happens. There's no doer in the doing. And then the situation is over, and then the old, usually the old mind patterns come back. But sometimes something is left in that person, an opening is left in that person that faced death, for example, if it was death, faced death and looked death in the face and suddenly the shift happens. So for some it becomes an opening that then becomes the transformation of consciousness. And the same in the moment of creation, in an artist and even a scientist, the creative impulse, that's the realization, comes out of no thought, still aware, alert presence. And that is grace. This is when space comes into your life, grace comes into your life. And you are then supported by life. The struggle of me
trying to make it goes away. It's like somebody who is learning to swim. When I first learned to swim, I remember the struggle of keeping myself above water. And then somebody said, try this. I don't know if you can do this. I learned in the Mediterranean, which has a lot of salt in it. He said, try this. Breathe in, and then you can just float. And I did. And the water carries me. It's not unfriendly. And when space comes into your life, the separation, which is insane, the egoic separation of me and the rest of the universe, or even worse, and this is how it usually is, me against the universe, that's how people live. That separation isn't there anymore. The more that space consciousness comes in, there is a oneness with me and the universe, not the separation of me and the universe. I am not separate from the totality. How could I be? I am an expression of the one, temporary expression in this form. Space and grace happen to be similar in the English language, and that's beautiful. Grace means something beyond the form that as which you appear temporarily here comes in, something that's beyond that, a greater intelligence. And also, the word that has been misused so much, love, true love, not the egoic love that says, I want you, don't you ever leave me. It's wonderful, in the Spanish language, there are two words for love. The usual one, the one that's mostly used, is to do with a certain wisdom sometimes embodied in language. Te quiero means I love you in its normal way, the egoic, which really translated means I want you. So in Spanish, I want you and I love you are the same. And then there is a deeper, which is very rarely used. They say it's poetic, which would be te amo. I love you, which is the love that is beyond ego, that is the love that can only be there when there is space. It is inseparable from space. So how does that operate? A human being comes into your life. It may be just a brief encounter or someone you've known for a long time. There's an encounter. What the Course in Miracles calls, whenever two human beings meet, it is a holy encounter. I would add, it is only potentially holy. And when that potential is realized, a meeting of two human beings is beautiful. Even if they are pretending to be engaged in some superficial interaction, like somebody is buying a newspaper and say, I'll have a copy of the LA Times, please, if you still buy it in shops. And then you, how much? Okay, keep the change or I'll have the change. But there's a moment of, are you meeting that human being? Or is that human being reduced to a form identity, a function, a role? Is that what you are doing to them? That's not a holy encounter. Holy encounter is when you can look upon a human being, no matter how briefly, in a moment of spacious, aware presence. Just look. There's no thought in it. There's just consciousness perceiving, knowing yourself as the perceiving consciousness, not concept. You might not, this is just one way of putting it. I lived like that for years, but after the shift happened in me, and I couldn't have said what I'm saying now, if somebody had said to me, oh, you now know yourself as unconditioned consciousness, I would have said, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. All I knew was peace. There's such peace. Wherever I go, it's peaceful. Well, whoever I meet, there's peace as an underlying field. The middle of traffic, there's peace as an underlying field. That's all I knew. For years, I couldn't say much about it. So what happened to you? I said, well, I was always in turmoil. It was dreadful. And suddenly, I've been at peace ever since. Very deep, beautiful peace. Don't know. That's all I can say. And then after years, I talked to other masters, teachers, masters, and they said, a few Zen people, and they said, one master said, Zen? What's that? No thought. That's how they talk sometimes. No thought. And if you don't get it, they may hit you. And he said that, and I said, oh, my God, I realize now that for the past few years I haven't been thinking very much at all. That's where the peace comes from. Wow. I didn't know. And then some others added a few more things, so gradually I could say a little bit more about it. And then I recognized it when others, no matter what traditions came, whether they were Buddhists or mystical Christians or Hindu, or any Sufis, any whatever tradition, I recognized whenever the truth was being pointed to, I said, oh, yes, that's what they're talking about. Oh. It's so simple. It's everywhere. So two human beings meet and there's a flow of, one could almost say, a current of awareness that is there as the sense perception happens. And another aspect of that, of course, is allowing this moment to be as it is, and this moment is taking the form of this human being. Forms change continuously. So you allow this form to be, and there is the outflow of attention, of awareness. And now there is a true, you are meeting beyond the roles that you play on the surface level of this world. Because on the surface level of this world, you meet humans playing their respective roles. One person plays the role of customer, and the other person plays the role of employee. Or you play the role of doctor, and the other one is the patient. Or you play the role of father or mother. Dangerous roles if you completely identify with them. If you completely identify with father or mother, you will continue to play the role even when your children are 30 and 40. Does that sound familiar to some of you? Completely identified with being a mother. I know what's best for you. When they are 50, the mother still... I'm not. It's beautiful to play the role of father or mother, but to be identified exclusively with any role is a dreadful limitation and brings suffering. So I can be a mother, but can also be there as space for the child to be, to give the child space, to be able to look at the child without some movement of thought that says, you should be doing this, now do that, why didn't you do that? To just look, to just give attention, to listen. Listening and looking, that I'm using these conventional words, meaning the flow of awareness, which can flow into listening and looking, but it's not the looking itself isn't important. The listening, the words themselves are not that important. The child may be talking about what happened at school, but there is space. And that's the greatest gift that frees you of the roles you play. Not that you don't play them anymore, but they become spacious. There's a lot of space around the roles, and then you become much more effective even in the function, even in the roles you play. You become a much better mother or father or employee or boss or doctor, no matter what the roles are, when you are not exclusively identified with the role. Imagine meeting a doctor who is just, and there are many these days who are just doctors because they are so identified with, their mind is crammed full with stuff. They've been conditioned like that since childhood. So they don't really, they're not there. You are a case history. Okay, take that, 5 pills a day, this. They hardly look at you. They're so burdened, one patient after another. Okay. Next, and then there's a doctor who may be equally busy but gives you attention just a moment and so goes beyond the role and is there as aware presence. And you feel suddenly, oh, it's so good. There's space here. And as another human gives you space, space arises within you too, and it feels good to be there. And then the doctor just makes one or two little remarks which were not premeditated, which came out of that space, that stillness in him or her, which help you greatly. He said something. And I know some doctors who work in that way. They are enormous blessing to all their patients. Not that they neglect their form identity. The form identity becomes incredibly enhanced through going beyond form. Oh. So you honor the world of form, but are not trapped in it, not consumed by it. Awful what it does to people in when they don't know themselves as spacious awareness, how forms consume your life completely. My God. It keeps the space. Ah. And then, no matter where you go, there's always inspiration comes through that. Spontaneous action comes through that. Realizations. A sense of oneness with whatever you perceive, which is not there when whatever you perceive is immediately labeled and interpreted and given some form identity. Not that you don't think anymore, thought still comes. You're no longer exclusively trapped in thought. So you can look at a tree and there's a moment of spacious awareness as you look, the perception happens. Stillness. You look in and through stillness. And then perhaps your child asks, Dad, Mum, what's this? What's that? That is the age when children start, that the human mind demands labels. And you must satisfy it. That's the evolutionary stage of the child. The human mind wants the labels. Dad, what's that? And the dad would normally, or the mum would normally say, it's an oak tree, or it's a tree. And already the dad or the mum didn't realize that a prison is already forming for the child. Because the next time the child looks at a tree, the looking will almost not be, because immediately it recognizes, it classifies it as, oh, a tree, a tree, a tree. But if the father or mother could say, when the child says, what's that? Says, look, touch, see that? These are, it moves in the wind. And encourages the child to give more attention before the label is given. And then you could say, we call it a tree. And then after you say it, encourage again to look. Look there, the movement of the leaves. These are leaves, but now look. Listen to the noise the leaves make, and then listen. Don't get lost, in other words, don't get lost in abstraction. Don't get lost in a totally conceptualized reality. It's a nightmare. A conceptualized reality, you walk around with a conceptualized sense of self in a conceptualized reality. What a way to live. And then, of course, it's not surprising when millions and millions of humans live in that way, what they create externally. And all that is great in human beings, when you look, yes, a lot of human history is complete insanity, but also, here and there, there are great and wonderful things that have come through human beings. Creations, artistic, otherwise, or sometimes just acts of great love, helping, great insights, great. So whenever this has come into, it's always been through that, not through the accumulations of the human mind. The human mind may have come in at a later stage to give expression or form, but the insights, the greatest, greatly inspired things, the great works of music, of art, all came from the deeper level of the unconditioned. So one could almost look upon human history as a case history. If the whole of humanity were a human being, that human being would presumably be in a mental home. But if you looked at the case history of that human being, it would be a case history of insanity with a few lucid intervals, of beautiful lucid intervals here and there. And those are only pointers to what is possible. But lucid intervals are no longer enough now. Humans need to enter that state, and that's a limited way of putting it, and it is happening, they are doing it, it is happening, the doing and the happening are one. Because sometimes people ask me, well, isn't it happening anyway? Yes, it is, but you still have to do it, your doing is the happening. So what do you have to do? Nothing. Allow this moment to be as it is. Well, isn't that a doing? No, not really. Everything else is a doing. Just this. And naturally, the aware presence is already there. It doesn't need to be brought about. It is only obscured. That's all. So it is very true when you may have read some of the Buddhist masters, they sometimes say, you are already enlightened. And that's a strange thing to say, but it is true. It is not true if that becomes a thought form in your head. Then it leads to more trouble. If you walk away and say, okay, I'm already enlightened. But in a deeper sense, of course, it is true that the consciousness that is unconditioned is already here in you now. Just so the quickest way to it, it's so quick that it doesn't require time at all. If time comes in, that will be the obstacle. The surrendered state of consciousness that says yes to what is. That's all. And then there is space. The yes brings the space or makes you realize the space that's already there. Have space in your life or realize that what happens in your life or what does not happen in your life is not absolutely important. Relatively, yes, but not absolutely. Your state of health, your finances, your work situation, your relationships, your home situation, those are the usual levels that bring problems. Or those things are relatively important. It is good to honor all those. This is the level of form. But perfection is not to be found there. You get one right and the other one leaves you this. Nothing that happens in your life is that important, and nothing can give you yourself or take away yourself. No gain in life can give you yourself, and nothing that you lose is really significant as far as who you are is concerned. So there comes a freedom with that, a space between you and what happens also. And here too a little paradox comes in. What happens tends to be more benign, more benevolent when there is space in your life. As I said earlier, grace comes, support comes. You are no longer living your little life. You are lived by the greater life, by the one life. That's the only way the world can change, when humans realize that. And the most important change is in you now, not the next moment. Thank you. Thank you.